Hello and welcome to the Womb-Centered Healing Podcast. And we'll probably also publish this on the Writing from the Womb podcast because we're going to be talking about writing, particularly, well, first let me introduce our guest, Irene Chong. Thank you so much for joining us, Irene. I think we've been involved in each other's, you know, online life for a little bit, but Irene volunteered to write a review for the Biomystical Womb Journal and wrote a lovely review, which will be included in the book. And I wanted to invite Irene to come on the show and talk about your work, Irene. I would love for you to introduce yourself and share about your work. And I know you work with creativity and that the idea of this journal was very appealing to you and your work. And I'd love to hear about your work and how you feel the Biomystical Womb Journal might be a valuable resource to the people that you work with and, you know, to whomever is interested in accessing and connecting with our creative expression and embodied creative expression.
Thank you, Jessica. And thank you so much, first of all, for inviting me to your podcast and also for the good work that you do. It was a real honor and a privilege to write the review for you because I truly feel that this work is so sorely needed in the world today, especially for women. So I'm a coach, a healer, and a creative, and I work primarily with women to help them access that creativity that they have. And so much of it, if you think about it, as women who have wounds, and that's where your journaling prompts come in, I think a lot of women have lost touch with that inner wisdom, that innate feminine wisdom that they have inside of themselves, which is very much in the womb, in the heart, in the gut, if you don't want to use the word womb. But so many women, I have felt, and it was certainly my journey as well, which is why I started doing this and sharing and putting my work out into the world, because I really believe that a new paradigm shift is happening, and this education is so sorely needed in the world today. That's why I really believe in the work that you do, and where your journaling prompts come in, because I do work with creativity, with drawing, with dance, with movement, and also with writing. I've been taking writing workshops myself, and I also write. I find that makes for a beautiful entryway for people to get in touch with their inner truth. And sometimes, you know, those free writing prompts. And what I really do appreciate about your book was that it wasn't just full of information. Oh, you need to do this, 1, 2, 3. It was very much this is a space for you to tap into and go with what you feel, not what I tell you you should be feeling or thinking or knowing. So I really like that aspect, which I feel, there are already so many books out there, for one. Not enough, but there are. But there are very few that honor and encourage women to own their own truth. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you bring that up, because that, coming to that place, that has been a part of my work that keeps coming round again and again. And it's like, it's how I introduce this work. And it's also, it's always the place we return to, is that inner listening. And, you know, I've had the experience of working with mentors and teachers and it's very easy for mentors and teachers and coaches and therapists to, even myself, to get wrapped up in the beauty. We fall in love with our own process and the things that worked for me, or the things that worked for you, or the things that worked for a therapist. And it's easy for me to, you know, fall in love with the creative process of creating a modality or an approach, or, you know, having a unique way of articulating and putting these practices into practice. And then it's a very short little step to say, oh, this is the best thing for everyone, and to do it this way, A, B, step A, step B, step C. But the problem with that for me is that I've seen that go terribly wrong with many well-intentioned therapy modalities, where people become quite dogmatic, and we see it in religions, we see it in spirituality, we see it in all kinds of things, and that can become very problematic. And ultimately, what any of these therapeutic modalities are pointing to is empowerment and bringing us back to our own inner wisdom, each individual's inner wisdom. So yes, we need people who have experience going through a healing process to guide us sometimes and to support us along the way. But what we really need is for those allies, those mentors, to devotedly point us back to our own inner wisdom. And that's what the process of me writing this book brought me to. And the way it did that was that my process of writing the book was becoming so infinite that it was never going to be finished.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's the thing with the you know, the topic and the outline of it was so vast, and that there's so much healing to be done, that I was never going to be able to finish the book, and it really needed to be published. And then I realized, wait a second, I already finished it, because I had created this series of questionnaires for case study participants in the program based on what I wanted to write in this book. I wanted people to participate in it with me. I didn't just want to make it up myself and not have any feedback about, is this valuable or not, right? So I had this whole 2-year long apprenticeship program, and it's still going on. It's more than 2 years, but it took me 2 years to develop it and get people involved and have 2 rounds of people go through the apprenticeship program to really work with the material that I was wanting to present in this book. And I put these questionnaires together so that they could reflect on these processes. And that was the book. That's what I realized. That's what the book needed to be, to honor that, the infinite quality of this work. So I'm so glad to hear you reflecting back how useful that is. Because when I realized that, it was like, of course, because this is the essence of this work. If I sit here and I could go on and on forever about, you know, the effect that this work has had on me, right? Because it's infinite. But really, the more important thing is for the people reading the book to write their own story and let that wisdom come through them.
Yeah, there were so many gems in what you were sharing. And I just want to add on, I have like 2 or 3 things I'd like to say about that. Mm-hmm. Because you're also a teacher yourself. Mm-hmm. And maybe just to give the audience here a bit of background about me, I spent slightly over a decade as a former school teacher. So I was working in a conventional school system. So, you know, there's often that stereotype of the teacher standing in front of a classroom or a lecture talking to the students. But a lot of what I found in my experience, what worked best was when we facilitate and we guide and we draw out the wisdom that honestly all human beings already have. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a lot of our spiritual beliefs are very similar in that we believe in the innate wisdom and we trust in the innate wisdom of the body and the soul, that we all have spirit here. So it's not about a top-down, someone telling you to do this and do that. It's a reciprocal relationship where there's listening, active listening, and then feedback, and then also allowing the other person. I really loved it when you mentioned empowerment, because that is also very much in line with the work that I do. And now as a coach, and I think, with the clients that I have, a lot of women come to me, but they don't realize, or perhaps they have a traditional view of what coaching is, which is, okay, someone who is an authority figure telling you what to do, motivating you, pushing you to get things done. But that's very achievement-oriented. And I think in a lot of the sacred feminine work that we do here, coaching takes on a different paradigm where it's about holding space, creating that nurturing, safe space for the other person to, number one, feel held, and number two, be able to sink in and access her own inner wisdom, which is so precious, but it's also something that we haven't been taught. We haven't, so many of us haven't had access to this part of me and this part of ourselves. And I know that for myself, that was like a huge learning curve from, first of all, being a student, being put in a conventional system where you are told that the teacher knows all the answers and you just need to listen and absorb. But there was very little, you know, Irene, what do you think? What are your thoughts? What are your opinions? There was very little of that. So I find that, you know, so much of the work that I do as well in my coaching practice and in the workshops that I guide is about, number one, trusting and knowing that the other person, be it my clients or my students, already have the answers inside of themselves. They just need to know how to access that. So the journal prompts that you have, you know, that's a really effective way whereby it's not like, oh, I know all the answers, read this book and you'll know everything. Mm. It's exactly like what you say, a co-creation, a collaboration with your reader, with your audience. There is that invitation to say, hey, you know the answers. Here are the questions to guide you along. And let's see what emerges from this creative space.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what you're sharing, you know, it's bringing up reflections for me around the how our educational system that has been designed around shaping people into and molding people into to fit into a particular lifestyle. So the educational system here in the United States and perhaps other places in the world has very specific intentions around what it's trying to achieve with the population. Okay. And, you know, that's a topic for another conversation, but I can say that it is not to produce happy, healthy, creative, critically thinking people who are able to create their own truth in the world. That's not its primary objective. Okay. It's more about creating people who are good workers, who can, you know, who will toe the line to keep the whole system going the way it is. But so a lot of us got shaped as children, as malleable children in that educational system, especially female-bodied people or people who don't fit in the binary gendered societal system that is, you know, what's kind of really pushed as the reality when it's not really the reality. So whoever doesn't fit in that, or, you know, whoever's not the dominant gendered person on that binary hierarchy, right? Which is the man at the top, right? Whoever's not that is then molded to be in service to the man at the top, right? And that is wounding. That is terribly harmful because it makes us disconnect from anything that doesn't fit in that shape, into that mold. And out of fear for, you know, having our basic needs met and, you know, being able to fit in the world. And so, and yet we just long to be connected with our soul's purpose and what we're truly here for, because that system doesn't create happy, healthy humans. It does. It just doesn't, even for the man at the top, you know, it's just not a healthy system. And so We, you know, those who get into healing and realizing that this system hasn't helped us become that, then it's like, well, what shape are we supposed to grow into? How can we heal from that wounding of being forced to fit into this shape? And what I notice is that habit of being forced to fit into a shape doesn't get tossed away that easily. A lot of healers then force themselves to fit into a healing modality or a dogma and learn a thing, and then think that they're going to help somebody by forcing them to fit, not forcing necessarily, but by saying, if you just abandon that shape you were forced to fit into and then fit yourself into this other shape that's better, maybe it's healthier, but you're still forcing yourself to fit into a shape, you know, following a teacher or a path or, you know, a modality and making that your new set of rules. And at a certain point, we need to discover our own inner guidance.
Mm.
And truly,
well, you're saying so much that speaks to my heart, and it just lights me up. And I just found myself like nodding and smiling, because yes, this really comes down to the heart of why I'm doing what I do today. So don't get me wrong, I do see a lot of good in conventional education. Mm-hmm. I excelled at the system. There was a lot of academic rigor that I appreciate and that still benefits and serves me to this day. But as you know, I've also taught as a school teacher, and it was actually there that I learned about the difference between the kind of traditional top-down teacher talk and a kind of facilitation that really takes place. And a lot of my training, and I've had the privilege of teaching at some of the top schools here in Singapore, and also working at the ministry where I did a lot of research and trained other teachers as well on the best pedagogical approaches, which is not about lecturing and just giving information. As you know, like in the world that we live in today, there is, you know, I love the term that I heard, it's called infobesity. There's just so much information out there, which is great. Which is great when you want an answer, you can just do a quick Google and you can easily access that information. But what happens when you have to discern for yourself what works for you, what is true for you, what is in alignment for your highest good? And I think the problem is that a lot of the conventional education system out there doesn't quite teach you that critical discernment for who are you as a person, what is your truth, and then how do you take on and absorb all this knowledge? You take what works and what serves you instead of just giving over your power, your sovereignty to another person who supposedly has the answers. Mm-hmm. So that was actually why I decided to leave a rather comfortable teaching position, because I felt that there was so much more that I wanted to serve and give. And I'd initially started teaching at all girls schools. And then when I switched to a school that had both male and female, and then there were, and I'm really glad you brought up the gender binary issue, because I had encountered several students who really struggled with their identities. And during those formative years, when it's so crucial that you have the right guidance, the right nurturing, you know, I found that conventional school systems aren't quite equipped to guide students that way. You know, exactly as you pointed out, there is an agenda shaping and molding the future generation for a certain purpose, whether it be for economic, social cohesion, what have you. I'm very well aware of that. But at the same time, exactly as you say, you know, there is very little prioritization of the individual's happiness. Mm-hmm. And especially as women, or women-centered people, mm-hmm. there is this sense that, you know, the feminine, and I believe your audience is familiar with the masculine and the feminine energies and the qualities there, but the feminine is very much receptive and giving and holding. So what then tends to happen, especially for women, is that we tend to allow and flow and just allow another person to come in and take over. And there is that forgetting that there is power in softness, in that receptivity. Again, very much, you know, the conventional masculine paradigm where you have to achieve, you have to go, you have to hustle. And that's why I call my company Alignment Journeys, because it's not about achievement. It's about alignment. It's about coming back and centering within yourself, being so that you can act from a place where you are fully aligned.
Beautiful. Yeah, there's so many things in what you shared that are inspiring me. And I want to go back to what you were talking about around critical discernment. And it made me think about what that means. And a lot of people talk about critical thinking skills and how can we teach that? And looking at the words of that critical thinking, for me, it brings up a question. Is it really, is criticism critical, right? Is that really the term that means what I feel is important to develop? And it kind of isn't, because if we emphasize the criticalness, the criticism aspect of things, then we're constantly debating who's right and who's wrong, and then we're in another realm that we don't really want to be, that takes us away from what really needs to happen, which is to feel inside ourselves. Because if it's critical, then it's too easy to say, oh, I think about this differently, and so that therefore I'm right and you're wrong. Whereas if we're feeling, and we're really feeling in ourselves and in our bodies, what feels good to us, what makes us happy, then it's easier to say, oh, well, I understand if someone else feels differently about this and something different makes them happy. It doesn't make them wrong. I don't have to criticize them or argue with them. They can be happy in a different way than I'm happy. And that is liberating for everyone. So I feel like embodied discernment is what we really need to learn. And that and share with each other, right? And help each other to learn. And that's what I am attempting to impart in my work. And it sounds like perhaps in yours as well, of how do we feel, how do we approach the world embodied in our whole being, and liberate ourselves from this, from the indoctrination that the only way to navigate the world is through thinking, right? But when, you know, we talked about mental health earlier, and, you know, it's become very clear in the mental health communities that we can't think our way through to better mental health. There are some techniques and modalities that are very talking therapy or thinking, changing your thinking process, orientation, which is very helpful. But if we don't address our biochemistry, if we don't address our whole body's health, it's only going to get you so far. So I just wanted to bring up some of those things. And thank you for sharing so many inspiring thoughts. And I'd love to hear if you have any more thoughts on all.
Yeah, you started off with a really insightful question right there. And I'm so glad you brought it up, because the word critical is so loaded, the kind of connotations that it carries. And I am very particular and careful with my languaging. I was an English major and I taught literature. So you're absolutely right in saying that in society out there, the traditional or typical generalization of the word critical is that, oh, we think of the inner critic, or we think of criticism as judging, evaluating. And there is a different definition to critical, which is when we say that something is critical, we say that it is essential. We say that it is vital.
Yes.
we say that it is significant and important, and that is what the actual term critical thinking means. It's not meant to criticize.
Yeah.
Critical discernment, right, is that vital, significant ability to discern for yourself that is so essential, especially in the world that we live in today. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because I can imagine that with a lack of clarity and misinformation out there, people might assume that, oh, I need to be a critical discerner, which means that I need to judge myself. And no, there is none of that. In this sense of the word, what I mean by critical is that vital and innate sense of wisdom that you have that you can tap into, that is so critical, to use the word again.
Yes. So, so glad you reminded me of that other meaning of the word critical. And that brings us back to perhaps there's a healthy criticalness that's essential to in our relationships, of looking at together at what's important instead of attacking each other and saying you're wrong and I'm right, or you know, there's a wrongness and rightness, like with what we typically go for with criticism, but to say what's really essential
here. Yeah, and when you bring it back to that feminine paradigm, criticism in a very masculine paradigm is competition, comparison.
Yeah.
Those words that you mentioned, you know, a very aggressive sort of attack. But in the feminine paradigm, what you have instead is collaboration, cooperation, co-creation, where two minds, two people come together and they critically think and they add value to the work or the project that is being created, very much like the dialogue that we're having now. Mm. And, you know, I can see why you highlighted the word, you know, embodied discernment instead, because I do feel that what is so important in this day and age is emotional and physical health, and that they cannot be divorced from mental health. Because right now, exactly as you pointed out, there is so much highlighting of mental health, how that's important because of, you know, recent events that have been happening in the past couple of years, but it was always rising. And to me, I think the huge problem with that and where womb work comes in is that people have lost touch with their feelings. Mm. Earlier, we're talking about how people don't know how to process their feelings. And so they jump into their head where, you know, being logical and analytical seems to be safer, seems to be more helpful, because, you know, people don't know how to cope or manage. And, you know, I was just thinking of this incident that took place when I was growing up, and why even well-intentioned, sometimes well-intentioned advice doesn't quite align with what a person is truly going through. So I remember that, you know, I grew up in a very a family with a lot of trauma and woundings. So, but I was keeping it all in and just sort of, you know, keep on and carry on. That was the sort of philosophy that I was taught. And I remember one time when I was in high school, and I was carrying all this pain inside of me, and I just couldn't hold it any longer. So I was in a female toilet with my best friend at the time, and it was just the two of us. And I just couldn't control myself, and the tears started coming because of something that happened just the other night at home. And this is my best friend, very well-meaning and very well-intentioned. She just told me, stop crying, Irene. You'll become ugly that way. Mm. And it was very well-intentioned, but it wasn't the right kind of advice I needed at the time. Mm. But it also goes to show that so often, so few of us know how to hold a space where that allows another person to be vulnerable, allows a person to process emotions, whether it be anger, rage, you know, emotions that women have been taught to suppress because it's not nice, or even to just shed tears. And I find that this is so important, not just about, you know, mental health, but emotional health. How do we create an environment that is healthy, that nourishes people so that they feel safe to express themselves, express themselves first and foremost, their emotions, and then creatively so that they can put their work out into the world. And a lot of this comes back, I found, for me at least, accessing the wisdom of my womb. Because to get, you know, similar to you, I've had many really great mentors and teachers that helped me along my path. I started off learning about energy healing, which helped a lot. But even then, a lot of the advice that was given was just, you know, if an emotion comes up, let it go. Don't look at it. Focus on the energy, that it's all energy. But I found that because there has been such a huge suppression of emotions, and as women, we tend to be sensitive and we feel a lot, that repression that has, you know, I would say for me, for generations, when I look back at my ancestry, you know, the sort of just push on through for survival, right? It was a luxury for my ancestors to be able to feel and emote because they were focused entirely on surviving, making a living. Whereas I think for us today, in spite of all the chaos and the messiness that's going on, there is a certain gift that we have now where it is so much easier for us to be able to acknowledge certain issues that have come up. Mental health, certainly. I think trauma is another one. And when people think of trauma, they usually think, oh, of something really extreme and intense. But I'm also referring to the microaggressions that can happen in day-to-day living that we're not always aware of.
And, you know, I'm glad you said that right then, because what you were saying about emotions and this tendency, the way that we've been taught to sweep them aside, especially in healing modalities or spiritual practices, that emotions keep being pushed to the side as something that's problematic to overlook, to set aside, when our emotions are a source of tremendous wisdom. And yes. when we allow ourselves to feel them and integrate the information we're getting from our emotions with all the other awarenesses that we might have developed, and receive our each emotion as a source of wisdom, then we can start to become aware of these microaggressions, as you said, and, you know, my understanding of that term comes from working with social justice and you know, feminism, where we're looking at all the little ways that the structures of our lives have been built in ways that are unbeneficial to certain populations, women, people of color, people of, you know, anything, you know, because that man on top I talked about earlier is of European descent and is already quite wealthy. Right.
And how it becomes so normalized that most people don't even think about it.
Exactly.
Until something happens. And
right. It's just the way it is. And we're taught to just accept. And if you have an emotional reaction to the injustice that's built into our day-to-day lives and the harm that we're just supposed to grin and bear, right? That's happening because of this hierarchical system that only favors a very narrow population and makes everyone else less than, and gives everyone else mental health problems because we're doing everything we can to make ourselves fit into this shape that most people can't even fit into, you know, that it's impossible to get to. So there's all of this harm that's happening all the time because of this structure, these structures in our society that are designed to only benefit a very few people. And it's not even benefiting them. They're not even happy. So, feeling our emotions and really feeling that, wow, I don't like this. This doesn't make me happy. Why is that? How is this harmful to me? Why am I upset when somebody treats me that way? When somebody says things to me that way? You know, why is this hurtful? And really inquiring into the emotions and the wisdom underneath that, underneath our anger, underneath our frustration, underneath our grief, our sadness, and start allowing those processes in our lives is hugely healing. And then we start to become creative activists of saying, how can I create systems in my personal life, but also how can I participate collectively in creating systems together that are actually more conducive to health and happiness for more people? And that's where our emotions will guide us. And it's my hope that this journal and that our work as collaborators together we'll find ways to create healthier, happier systems that work better for everyone. And on that note, I'm noticing our time is running out. I would love to invite you, Irene, to share about if you have a place that folks can get in touch with you about your work that you'd like to share with the listeners on the podcast today.
Thank you for asking that. I just want to add on a very quick point because this also relates to the free offering that I do have for your audience here, which is earlier on you had mentioned conditioning. And a huge part, I think, of the work that we do is about helping our clients unravel the conditioning that they were entrenched in and had no idea growing up as children. Because I have found that when working with my clients, it takes a bit of work to help them process and feel and even access and get in touch with their emotions. Because for so long, they have been conditioned to be cut off. And where I see your journal prompts as coming into the work that I do is, you know, holding the space and guiding my clients gently by using some of those prompts. Because it did occur to me that for someone who isn't in touch with their womb or their hearts, with their emotions, doing this work can be hard to access it. To just read a book, you sort of jump into your headspace, right? You read a question and then you try to answer from that mental space without actually tapping in and becoming embodied first, grounding and centering in the wisdom of your body and your heart. And so I find that in a lot of the work that I do with my clients, I first have to create that shift, that space for them so that they can then access that wisdom. So I just wanted to point that out. And in relation to how your audience can read more or find out more about my work, I do have a website and I'll give you the link, which you can post together with this interview. And the other thing is that I just had a fun, pleasurable workshop to help women as a first baby step access their creativity. And it's meant to be, I think we didn't talk about this, but I think you and I agree that this shouldn't be painful or trigger any more trauma. It's about, you know, that feminine sense of play and fun and pleasure that comes and nourishes our very beings. So this workshop is, it's a bite-sized, you know, 2 hour. There's a couple of videos and then I take you through a guided activation to again, access your inner wisdom. And then to create what I call a sacred vision altar board. So it takes, you know, if you're familiar with what vision boards are, and I think it seems to be quite trendy in the past couple of years, this one takes it to a whole different level where you are creating with intention, with presence, and to just have fun and bring your dreams into fruition to allow you to express yourself in that way. So I'll also put a link and your audience can subscribe to my list and get access to the workshop recordings.
Lovely. I'm inspired. I can see a spot for it over on my altar. So I want to encourage folks to click the link in the description to access this wonderful little mini workshop that Irene is offering for us, and also to look for the link in the description, because by the time this podcast is published, you will be able to purchase your very own copy of the Biomystical Womb Journal, and I'll have the link for that in the description as well. So thank you so much once again, Irene, for joining us on the podcast, and many blessings to all. Let us all remember to listen to our own inner wisdom at all times. So thanks so much. Any last word of wisdom from you, Irene?
Just to say thank you, Jessica. This entire entire conversation has been very enjoyable and pleasurable. And my hope for your listeners or your audience is really to take pleasure in the little things, to find the sacred in the everyday, to know that they are deserving and completely worthy of accessing their own creativity, to access their own worth, and to know that the true worth really comes from the inside and not from the outside.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. All right. Well, that's beautiful. And that's all for now. Until next time, take good care.